How's it going, everyone? Welcome to This Week in Mormons, your weekly Mormon news review.
I like that. I like being a news review rather than being like a roundup. I feel like review is a little more flashy.
Well, it also implies that we have opinions, which we do. If it were a roundup.
We do. We do. We absolutely do.
We are more than an aggregator. We are an agitator.
Oh, Jeff, that's adorable. Thanks, everybody, for joining us this week.
Yeah. Okay.
We're the worst. But not really. We're also the best.
That's a riddle right there. I am the worst and the best. Who am I?
It's true. Jeff, how are you? I of course, am Al. I'm joining Jeff. We are your co-hosts.
By the way, listeners,
for This Week in Mormons.
In case you're interested, we love you all. We do. We love you all immensely. But I do spell my name with a G. So if you send us a note.
I like getting notes to Jeff, J-E-F-F.
Let's spell my name correctly, the appropriate.
Because I take that persona and I reply as though I am Jeff with a J.
And I reply as if I'm Al, in which case all I do is cast aspersions at people.
Sorry about that. That is fair.
That's what I'll do.
Sometimes I'm a little negative Nancy. That's all
right. Okay, if you want, though, we can do that. Anyone, if you send us an email this week at contact@thisweekinmormons.com, Al will answer as me, and I will answer as
yep.
Al.
Well, I'm just gonna start spouting off capitals of countries and then make fun of you for not knowing where these countries are.
I am of the opinion that everyone should know where the Solomon Islands are. It just goes without saying. Come on.
That's fair. When King Solomon settled those islands and cut them in half and gave one half to Kramer and the other half to his son.
Uh-huh. That's beautiful.
That's a historic moment. You got to know.
Well done, sir. Well done. Thank you. How's your life?
It's good. It's good. I was just in L.A. A great birthday party was had for the fabulous woman I'm dating currently, and we went to Disneyland, and it was kind of funny as I put this video up on Facebook. I think you saw it, but I was trying to walk down the sidewalk in Main Street. Disney or whatever that's called.
Main Street USA, modeled after Marcellin, Missouri, where Walt Disney grew up. Continue.
That's the one. And so I'm walking down there and it's super packed. And so I like there was a Frozen float that had gone by and everybody was sitting watching the Frozen float.
What happens is there's a parade happening right now. Everyone's lined up on the sides and there's a parade going on.
Well, no, it was the last float. It was a Frozen float and it went by and I think they were waiting for something else. So anyway, I'm walking down the middle of the road. There's nobody else around and all these people are standing there. So I start doing my dance. I'm dancing down the street. All of a sudden, people are going, like, they start clapping. And then it got louder and louder. I kept dancing. Jeff, it was like, this was my moment that if I were going to write a TV show, it would have been this moment. And, like, pretty soon, everybody was cheering. And I finished my dance right at the end of this course. They have a rope there. And I turn around, like, even the Disney employees are clapping. And they high-five me at the end. They might have thought I was like a Make-A-Wish kid or something. I'm not sure exactly, but, but I was very entertained. The other great moment this week was I flew out Sunday at noon, and so it was too early of a flight to get to the ward that I'm assigned in, and the local ward where I'm at. They had a big meeting where they changed bishops and realigned boundaries and all that kind of stuff, and that was happening at like 1 o'clock, so I had to miss that one too. And so I went to the Baptist church here just for kicks to go say hi and see all these people. And they stopped the meeting right in the middle and were like, we're making history in Hamilton. We got a Mormon in the midst of these Baptists, which was kind of great to get called out right in the middle of a service. Be like, all right, hey, everybody.
Thank you.
Just here. And then they really encouraged all the non-Christians to come and accept Christ, which I thought was sweet of them.
Including you, of course. Yeah.
But it makes for an interesting email. You send it a weekly email to, I send a weekly email sort of update of what I've been working on to my stake president. And so I sent a note. I was like, this week I went to the Baptist church. Hope that's okay. I know I should be supporting Saints and ours, but I couldn't help myself. It was nice.
That's
pretty entertaining.
That's delightful. You should. There's a great movie called Baptists at Our Barbecue. I feel like that could
that's
be
not a great movie.
It could be a uniting.
Oh, you know what else great? Oh, what else great happened? I went to a Relief Society birthday. up in
what do you mean?
They were doing during the week. It was like a celebration of release society, and the activity was Hollywood Squares, and so they asked me to go and be one of the characters in Hollywood Squares,
and you channeled your inner Shadow Stevens, and you made it happen.
Yeah. So they everybody just made up a character to play, and so they gave me Bill Nye the Science Guy, which I was fine with. And then there's some other, Psy from Duck Dynasty. But there was a
sure.
My favorite was a girl that played. She came as Whoopi Goldberg, with makeup and all. I was like, "Wow, where'd that come from?"
Like blackface?
Yes. It was amazing, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, I don't know that you're. I just don't know that you're pulling that off in most."
Do they? Is there happen to be like a stake or award Facebook group where they might have images from this event?
No, absolutely not. Well, it wasn't like legitimate blackface. It was like shades. I mean, it's just enough to be like, I don't know. I mean, I think that might be okay. I don't think that's okay though.
I once had a buddy of mine, the old other guitar player in my old band, but we were also just friends. He came up for Halloween as Shaq. Now, if you know my old friend Dusty, Dusty's about 5'4", little fella. And so he and his mom owned like a costuming company. So the dude put on a skull cap and did black makeup and the whole nine yards and put on a jersey and walked around with a basketball and giant wax lips because,
That's not okay.
His white guy lips were not good enough.
It's not okay either, but Shaq would be a great character to dress up as for Halloween. There would be Shazam, maybe. You could be Shazam.
No, it's Kazam. And everyone should do Kazam. I think Kazam should be remade every year.
But I don't feel like there's a definitive guide of appropriate, like how you could dress up. I mean, for maybe a black guy dressing up as a white guy. Again, there's no documentation on the appropriate use of makeup or accessories and vice versa. You know, all these ethnicities, they make it very hard to dress up as people. Because if you're Whoopi Goldberg, as a white person, really the only non-taboo that you're completely safe is just big hair and then a very annoying manner of speech. And I feel like that's it. I mean, your one option is maybe you could dress up as like Patrick Swayze and just be like a ghost by the transitive property back to Whoopi Goldberg. But for the most part, your hands are tied.
I hope they got the true vision of Whoopi, though, and they even shaved their eyebrows. That's important. That's part of the...
Wait, Whoopi doesn't have eyebrows?
No eyebrows. Look it up. You'll never be the same.
Okay.
You know,
how was your week, Jeff? How
well, it was lovely. Now, like, I think about his blackface and things like Zwarte Piet, that famous crazy Black Pete in Low Country lore. Anyway, that's
I read a great article on Pez dispensers this week and how
thank great.
No, but like they would have these scarce toys. It came through Hacker News. But they'd have these like one-offs it was like a blackface Santa that sold for like $3,000.
Oh my goodness, that's like getting the faceless Gambit card when you used to collect Marvel comic cards in the 90s.
Yes, basically the same thing.
I have a faceless Gambit. Yes, I do.
You do?
Yeah. You don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, is that worth money?
Some money. It's not like the rarest card, but it's worth some money. How much today? I have no idea. I got it like 20 years ago, and it's frightening
that
I realized
sell
that
it
20 years ago. No. Why would I sell my faceless?
Because you don't need a faceless Gambit.
Well, it was this thing where they'd have Gambit and the X-Men, and he just doesn't have a
trade
face.
Trade it for a Gambit with a face, maybe.
Anyway, I'm doing splendidly. Stuff's great. I had a good experience, good time on Saturday. We had some relatively recent converts that wanted to go do baptisms for the dead for the first time. And so Danielle.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah, so Danielle and I got together with them. And a couple of the missionaries who aren't here anymore, but they were the ones who taught them back in the day. So they're missionaries.
I just feel like you're a better Mormon than I am, Jeff. I went to a Baptist church.
You are a high counselor.
On Sunday. And you went to the temple and helped people do baptisms for the dead.
I did. It was great. Except for one of the temple workers sort of like slammed me in a way.
What did he say?
Well, we were waiting. I was helping out. So, like, me and some of the elders changed, you know, and we're just waiting to get things going. So we're sitting there in our white clothes. And he's like, so this guy comes up. He's like, so are you the missionaries? And I was like, well, this one is, but I'm clearly not because I have a beard, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, yeah. He's like, did you grow? He's like, how soon did you grow that out? Then stop wearing white shirts to church, too? And I was like, well, not sure, but, and I felt so picked on. I'm like,
well, so this is interesting.
Come on, temple worker.
Because my mission president, so I sent a letter to my mission president who's serving as a temple president in Kyiv, Ukraine, just to catch up and say hi, you know, see how he's doing. And I had a really sweet experience with one of my old ladies that I had taught the gospel to, and she later got baptized and is currently working in the temple. And so
is this recent that you had this interaction?
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago.
Okay, cool.
It's pretty great though. She's like married with, you know, happily married. Was just very, very thankful. And I was like, oh, that's great. I should write and just talk about how great things are with my mission present. So I sent him a note and sent him a picture of me and you know, like me with my old buddy Dave, who was also a mission buddy, and we run the company together, and then me with my girlfriend and you know, stuff like that. And he writes back and like a very, very short letter. It's just like, oh, it's great. Glad things are going well. And, you know, I'd hope that you would have shaved your beard off, you know, just sort of in jest. And I reply, I sent him that picture that we put on our Facebook a while ago of like Jesus hugging the man. He's like, I'm so glad you didn't grow a beard. Welcome home. And I was like, actually, you know, what's great is both Jesus and my stake president are fine with me having a beard. It's not a big deal. And he writes back and he's like, well, I should remind him of so-and-so from the 70 and Elder Packer when he said. And I wrote it back, and I was just like, you know, and I was like, I know we're a little bit in jest, but there's obviously some truth behind what you're saying, where you're wishing that I was different than I am. And I'm just really glad that, like, I'm here, and I have a testimony, and I'm doing good. And I was like, and honestly, I'm out there looking for the other guy with a beard that feels picked on and you know, feels like they're trying to make him conform to some sort of a cultural expectation that has nothing to do with the gospel. And so then I sent him my scripture reference, because we were doing this back and forth. It's like Ezekiel 34:20-22, which just talks about how like it's talking about shepherding the gospel or being good shepherds over your sheep. And then how you have some cows that like will edge out and shoulder out all the weak cows and drive them out of there. Mm-hmm. That they'll get their comeuppance. It's just one of those of like the fact. Well, and even when cultural expectations are sort of set over the pulpit, I think we're okay to go and receive our own testimony of that, right? Like my focus is on more of the attributes of the gospel and less on, you know, whether I'm wearing a white shirt or you know, the uniform of the priesthood, quote unquote, that is more cultural and just some, you know, what some dude is comfortable with and wishes he saw more of it, BYU style, than anything else. It just bothers me when people start to associate like certain dress with the gospel, because that's not what the gospel is.
Yeah,
about.
No, I'm with you on that front, but I am curious about.
You can be with me 70%.
Yeah, all right. Or
you're curious what?
I will go with you, Twain. What the element, the parts of that I get you that I mean I have a beard too, and I defend my right to have a beard and serve in the fullest
it's
capacity.
Not that we have to, but yeah,
in the church, okay. Right? You know, it's fine. But then I want to understand more of the context of as why, because if it is just cultural, that's one thing. But if we're quoting, if you're, you know, your old mission president's alluding to quotations from members of the 70 or Elder Packer, like what do we have then doctrinally, or things that have been uttered from the pulpit, perhaps in general conference or wherever else, counsel against facial hair? And then why? I mean, I've always pinned our facial hair thing on honor code type stuff and on an anti-hippie movement from the 60s. And that's
he's referencing an address given to mission presidents that obviously address some of that. The I mean, any of the dress and grooming stuff. Well, we've talked about it before, but you know, the spirit will refine, right?
Oh no, I'm with you. But I just want.
I don't know if this may be completely contrary to the truth, but in my mind, you know, if you get up and you teach me about the gospel from the pulpit, that's great. And then if you tell me that you know I'm supposed to, I don't know. Like you tell me that I'm only supposed to wear dark colored slacks to church because that's what we do. You know, I associate the one with me, my eternal salvation, and the other with sort of a temporal expectation being set, that, you know, something that's maybe a little bit more of a like and less of Jesus said to wear dark colored slacks.
Yeah. But I guess,
and maybe there's a danger in that. Maybe we're supposed to accept everything wholeheartedly with no thought or critical thinking.
Well, no. But no.
But I think we're okay. I think we're okay to I mean, it's dumb that we're even having this conversation because really, a beard doesn't matter, and a striped shirt to church doesn't matter. But like the expectation that we put is a Utah culture.
It is, but the thing it's just because it's such a weird cultural hearsay type stuff. Like if President Monson ever came up there and said, like, guys, you shouldn't have beards, I think it would be a little bit...
example is President Hinckley when he said girls should have one piercing.
And like I'd get behind it. I might not fully understand it, but if it was like a clear directive from the prophet,
I'd say,
all right, whatever, sure.
The girl showing up to church with two piercings and coming to church to worship, thank you for coming to church.
Sure,
right.
Totally.
That should be the response, not "Oh, you have two piercings, shame on you."
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, line upon line for stuff, right? I mean,
let's say that girl with two piercings shows up in the temple. That doesn't keep you out of the temple.
No, of course not. Of course not. But then one of the other things I worry about.
But you don't want a worker coming in and interrupting her moment of like communing with God and making some stupid comment like that guy made to you that it jacks with your. With your open line of like feeling good about being there,
and it's like this wasn't the end of the world. I mean, he kind of, you know,
I just kind of blew it off
like,
joy,
oh, you goofy old man. But
it robs your joy.
Well, it speaks to an institutional or cultural problem we might have in the church, especially because at the end of the day, even if you just don't say stuff like that, that's the point of it. Like, there's no need.
Spirit refine. Yeah, if it's a problem. You know, let's set the foundation, the base commandments. Those are the ones that like are the big ones. And then everything else, the way to change someone's behavior is by focusing on them, on loving them and helping them feel the spirit, and everything else will come along with it.
And I do want to push back, but the whole concept of, you know, these are the big ones, these are the little ones. I think, you know, anything we receive that is a commandment for us to do is important. You know, no matter what, I guess we could say there are graver sins, so therefore obeying the commandment that is the antonym of that sin is, I guess, inherently more important than other ones, right? You know, it's more
also true.
It's more important that I don't murder someone than it is that I don't drink beer, for example. But
it's very important not to murder.
That's, you know, but at the same time,
it's a problem.
There's
a problem
line
in our church, though.
It is, because it's a cultural thing, and we have these expectations. But if like these things were doctrinal, and there are things that we really, really, really need to focus on, then I would love to hear more about.
That's the thing. These things aren't going to be doctrinal.
No,
right? You're not going to have, because I sincerely believe that Jesus could care less what my facial hair looks like. You know, what is it? 1 Samuel 16. I look on the heart, right? That's where he looks. Ah, he doesn't care.
But then 1 Samuel 15 is all about obedience. And failure to observe even the smallest bits of obedience was the downfall of Saul. So you have that, too. The downfall of Saul.
Great, great rebuttal. What I'm suggesting is that the Lord doesn't give us any commandments around how we look. You know, even like a modesty thing, and we talked about it before, modesty in the church especially has been kind of jacked to only talk about girls in miniskirts and showing cleavage, which is not, you know, any semblance of modesty, right? Modesty is in like not being prideful or boastful or showing off, wearing a miniskirt is a manifestation of trying to show off a little, you know, to a degree. But like that's the only part that we focus on. Yeah. We we've ignored the rest. Yeah. And because that's been talked about, you know, we have in our heads that there's some sort of a commandment in the church that you're not allowed to wear a skirt 2 inches above the knee. And the girl that comes to church in that skirt 2 inches above the knee, all anybody can think of is, oh, I got to fix that. When we really should be thinking, thank goodness you came to church. How wonderful it is to be here and worship together as saints, all worshiping, you know, all having an understanding and a testimony of the same gospel. And it doesn't matter all that other goofy stuff that we stress about, because it comes along with us. She's going to figure it out, right? If a beard was bad, I'm going to figure out that I need to shave my beard. And the Spirit's going to teach me that. You don't need to come and teach me that. You, guy in the temple, do not need to come and tell me that I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you there on the back in the main, that main point. Yeah, for sure. I mean, keep our focus where it needs to be. But you did say something yes. Like, hey, she shows up as if it's like not, you know, something that she's encouraged to do. But it does say for the youth, you know, like for the strength of youth, there are clearly dictated standards of modesty. But I'm 100% with you, Al, in the sense that, like, you know what, that's lower stuff to worry about than like, hey, it's great that we've got somebody here at church. Let's nurture testimonies and faith. And I agree with you. Things will be things like that get sorted out on their own in time. Like it's with
and standards of modesty, though, Jeff. That's a great one, because like when you go to a church dance or a youth conference, it's easy to express and say, all right, here's what's appropriate, here's what's not appropriate. When you come to church, if you are wearing clothes, you are welcome to come worship with us. And that is what we say. That is not what we do, unfortunately, because we're in a culture of judgy people.
Well, right? We are in a culture of judgy people. But, you know, we do subscribe to the notion that since we're at church, as much as is within our means and all that stuff, you know, we want to look our best out of respect for God.
Now, but there is no calling that is the modesty police.
No, of course not.
That doesn't exist. Of course not. And the fact that there are modesty police means that somebody's taking it upon themselves to fix that should not be.
No, there shouldn't be modesty police. I'm just saying, Al, that these are still things that we're commanded to do. But obviously, if someone shows up that is not in line with that, so to speak, we should not be.
You love them.
Yeah,
you
we love them. We should not be policing anybody about any of this.
They should not feel. They'll feel uncomfortable comparing themselves to everyone else. They don't need any help from us.
Yeah.
Right? They need to feel love, and they need to feel supported and accepted and encouraged to come back. And you know, that's your moment. That's your 3 hours a week that you've given yourself to go worship God. You don't need anybody critiquing your style of worship. Let them fix that on their own. And really, I mean, there's great supportive networks of people inside the church. You know, if you're a young woman, let the young woman's leader sort of guide you and just take her shopping one Saturday. Why don't you offer to do that? And you could encourage some of the selections that way or something like that, instead of saying, I can't believe you showed up looking like that.
I know. Speaking of some things of modesty, I found it very interesting that in the Ensign this month, in the First Presidency message, which has a depiction, this beautiful Danish painting of an angel comforting Christ in Gethsemane. It's a beautiful painting. And I found it very interesting that the angel had wings. That's what stuck out at me. Because you remember years ago we talked about this sort of controversy.
Yeah, angels aren't allowed to have wings.
Well, not that they don't have wings. Remember, they took a Carl Bloch painting, they got rid of the wings, and they added capped sleeves to the angels. They did not previously have capped sleeves. So yeah. I hope maybe in an official capacity we're coming around. This was not a painting where there was an instance where one would cap or decap the sleeves of the angel. But just seeing the wings remain on there, I was like, oh, cool. We're chilling out about stuff that's not as important. Like, I'm not... Because exactly it. I never went to a sermon or anything that talked about, like, yeah, angels don't have wings. It's an important thing. But it's one of those things that I kind of, like, figured out and learned. And when I saw depictions of angels and things growing up, I knew that was just an artistic representation of how the world has decided to portray angels. And I never mixed that up with my Mormon beliefs. And so it always kind of baffled me that the church would feel the need to so heavily edit stuff just to make sure we don't get the wrong idea, you know, just so we don't walk around thinking angels have wings or something. So maybe we're getting better.
I don't know.
Did you know that my mission president also made a beard comment to me once too? It's kind of funny you had the same thing.
What'd he say?
It was almost 9 years ago, dude, after we were done with Ukraine and I was traveling around. I was still at BYU, so I wasn't really like growing facial hair at the time or anything, but I was traveling around Europe and I didn't shave for a couple of weeks, okay? And so when I was in Slovenia right before I flew to Barcelona and I was going to see my mission president, I was debating, like, oh, should I shave this off or not? So I decided I just shaved up, got cleaned up before I traveled to Spain. First time I'd been back to Spain since my mission. And I saw my mission president. And when he saw me, he was all great, happy to see me. And one of the first things he just kind of said, mixed in with all of his pleasantries and hellos, he was like, oh, and you're clean shaven and you look great. And I don't remember any of the other positive stuff he said to me in that greeting, but I will always remember that it, like, went out of his way to note that I was not scruffy. It was kind of funny to me. And at that point in my life, I was like, well, I'm sure glad I shaved this morning in Slovenia and didn't show up here looking like a scruff ball. So that's good. But, oh, man. Just funny.
Yeah. I don't know.
We have weird
cultural
mores in this church, but that's we're working on it.
You know? I kind of feel like I'm here for the misfits. I'm here to go and grab the ones that feel slighted or the guys with a beard that are bold enough to have a beard. I'm on your side. I'm going for it.
Sometimes in that same misfit sense, I find myself, you know, like in Elders Quorum, I'm the Elders Quorum president. I find myself sitting there, like, when comments from different brethren, and I find myself maybe subconsciously going out of my way to sort of kind of lend credence to some of the more liberal points of view in my quorum, because I want to make sure, like, those voices feel validated when they have comments to share. But then I also realized after a while, I said, I want to be careful that I'm not alienating anyone who has a more conservative point of view in my quorum. And it's just been like, I don't know, it's funny. Because I feel the same way. Like, I want to look out for anybody in the church who feels a little, maybe a little out of place sometimes and feels overwhelmed. My ward's really great about stuff like that. I haven't had many.
That's
when you live somewhere like D.C. and your ward is like half Democrat, half Republican, you get a pretty nice, like, chill balance of just points of view and everybody just gets along. It's kind of nice. But
that'd be a great quorum discussion. I feel like speaking of quorum, so I had a I need to write a blog post on this because I am convinced that in our church the worst area of teaching has to be our priesthood quorums. Would you agree?
In general, yes. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but it's one of the first things I decided to tackle when they put me in as elders quorum president. And I have actually been pleased. If I could point to one thing I've been really happy about, it's been our teaching.
I've been in wards where it's been really good, but almost never is that the case. Every now and then you'll get like a great teacher that cares,
somebody that's
really good. But predominantly, I mean, we are like engineers or mechanics that just get up and read the book. And like I really want there to be a movement in the church of like. You know, once a month we have a musical number and then we have this special presentation by so-and-so before the lesson on this or, you know, whatever it is, like a 5-minute, you know, share some sort of scriptural insight from the institute, you know, like just things that sort of liven it up or break it up and give you.
Meeting?
Yes.
I have.
Yes.
So I have something I started trying out a couple of months ago. It's been actually kind of fun in my
Jeff, club. You should play the piano. Do a piano number.
No, share? Can I share?
Oh, yeah. Oh, did you do it?
No, not a piano number. We have opening exercises. Songs would be fun. But I decided to do sort of I call it question time. And it's a very simple thing where I ask him in advance. But I ask some guy in the quorum who's there to come up and just sort of introduce himself and what he does and who he is and blah blah blah, typical stuff like that to the quorum, but then open himself up to questioning of whatever variety it might be. And I think I talked about it last week on the show, didn't I? All the Russian lit. And it sounds like a minor thing, but it's actually been kind of fun because it's just like 3 or 4 minutes and it gets the quorum really kind of loosened up because you have some pretty funny engagements in this sense. I'm not saying that would work everywhere.
Well, I'm suggesting ways to maybe feel the spirit more, but your way is really good too.
You wanted
Jeff.
To sing a song and like about popcorn popping or something like
that. No, I want like a musical number or something where I can sort of put my head in my hands and just have a decent prayer in my...
Like you want someone in the quorum to perform for you? Because that's not going to happen.
Yeah. No, that's what I want. That's what I want to have
happen.
You can have a sister come play. But there are plenty of men that play the piano.
I don't have a piano in the room where we meet, so...
Jeff, you could sing a Les Miserables. Anyway, all right, we got Mormon stuff
I will
to
sing
talk
Bring
about.
Him
we,
Home.
That's what I was thinking. I would, Duke. I would love. I would love an Elders Quorum that started with that.
My prayer, la, la, la,
all right, all right. No, but that's what I'm saying. Do it. Bring that.
There.
Let that be a thing in priesthood quorums. Bring that back. All right. No. Oh, you're very nice. That's great.
He's a friend.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about catfishing at BYU, Jeff. I want you to shut your face and let me talk about catfishing.
Take me there. I want to go there. Okay, cool. Tell me about it.
All right, you got to calm down, buddy. You're all over the place. So you with your beard, how dare you? There were some BYU students who were getting, they fell in love with the same guy. So for those of you who don't know, catfishing is where you sort of, you fall in love with somebody online and they are not who they say they are, right? Typically, you know, like on MTV, it would be, you'd fall in love with this girl, she's beautiful, she sends you pictures and talk all the time, and then you go and meet her, and she's a 6'8" African-American man who plays football and goes by Tony. And you're like, well, that was not what I was expecting. He's like, ha, 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 ha.
Why does race matter?
That's how these things typically go. I just feel like, okay. I feel like the opposite of the, you know, the cute little girl is like a 6'8" linebacker is what I was describing.
Okay.
So anyway, this happened with a bunch of BYU students, but it's great because it happened at BYU because like the comments are like, they just knew everything that I thought was important. Like they would go to church and would talk about just coming home from a mission and everything. They just knew everything that I wanted, which I feel like is a lot of women at BYU. I mean, they would be very easy to play, right? That's what I'm saying is women at BYU, you're looking for the very predictable things, right? Take them out to an Arby's and say a prayer over your fast food, and they're like, he's really spiritual. He's really into that. And when in reality, it doesn't matter. No one cares about that. I mean, you could pray over your food. That's fine. But deciding on someone's spirituality based on how public they are with their spirituality-ness, with their prayers, that's silly. So BYU women, be mature. Be grown-ups about this.
It is sad because one of them says this went on for 2 years. Like,
it's a long time to be strung along by a fake person.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad.
And they found it out by comparing notes. Like, how great would that be to be like, I'm dating a Chuck who just went on a mission to the Philippines, and now he's back, and he loves kitties, and he really loves playing signs and going to the malt shop.
Yeah.
And he's his Elders Quorum president. That's how you know he's a good one.
Well, you very.
I don't know what that voice is I'm trying to do. I can't quite figure it out.
By the way, speaking of dating, I know you haven't watched this. I don't know if anyone's followed it, but you know the whole like LDS / Mormon Bachelorette thing has been going on. It's just so
I actually
bad.
Have not been following it at all. I haven't missed it one bit.
No, you shouldn't. I mean, like I used to get like gleeful pleasure out of laughing at how dumb it all was. The whole thing is just a big infomercial now. I can't even recommend it.
Are they finding love? Is anything happening?
Well, next week is the finale after we've watched like what all four bachelorettes go on. This is what the format has been. They show a girl, and of course they show her talking to the dating experts at the blah 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 company. I'm not going to name because I'm not going to give them a plug, but the company that's running it all. And then they meet up. They sit in some gazebo, and a bunch of parade of guys comes through, and they just like talk to them, and it's really forced. And they do product placement for Martinelli's, and it's wonderful. And then the Bachelorette will choose a couple of the guys to go on some like prime dates, which means, you know, dates. And then they go on the dates and then they just make a great like 20-minute video that they edit poorly where the same thing is said over and over again in different like interviews and interactions. So I kid you not, you'll have the same person explaining what they did on the date like four different times during the date after being visually represented during the, they need an editor badly. And so they usually only get, each bachelor has like two different dates with guys. And then that's kind of all that happens. It's very depressing. Yes, Al, I see what you sent me here.
Some of these Mormon bachelorette women.
Okay, these were the applicants, and
that one has a really big eye on one side. Do you notice
she's
this?
She's just doing a little thing. I've watched all of the applications.
Is she winking at me, or does she just have one really big eye?
I've watched all the application videos from it. Those were very amusing. But anyway, It's just, it's been set. I'll catch it like on YouTube. I'll see they put a new one out. And then I just sit there and I'm like, this isn't even a music.
Do not make this like a, like, oh, I'm just browsing YouTube. Oh, what's this? Another Mormon Bachelorette video.
I subscribe. I see the video up there and be like, let's see how bad this one is.
Of course you subscribe.
But it's just so boring. It's the whole thing is just a commercial for this. Aaron Elton, if you ever listen to our show again, I would like to be your host the next time they do The Mormon Bachelor. I will channel Chris Harrison. I will sit in front of a fireplace and be like, when we last joined Trevor, he was on his journey to find true Mormon love. But what will happen when
Trevor, do you feel like you could be genuinely in love with nine women?
But will he choose Braden or Mackenzie or Madison or Ashlyn? Who's to say? Find out next week on The Mormon
You'd
Bachelor.
Be great. You'd be really
Thank
good
you. That's
that.
My goal. It's going to be great.
Yep.
Other stuff that's going on. Let's see here. Lots of things are happening. Real quick one. So Meet the Mormons is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray for people who can't get enough of
Finally.
It.
Finally.
Yeah. We've all been waiting. As it turns out, though, it's kind of interesting. They did cut one part of the film. This happens in movies. Because when you make a 70-minute film, you know, you got to shorten it down. You have to beat Dumbo for the record of shortest feature-length film. It's important. So they cut out a segment with a woman who was named Giovanna. She's the artist. She was an Italian-born woman who was a member of the church, and she's an artist, and she was cut out of the film. But if you buy the Blu-ray or DVD, you will get an hour's worth of never-before-seen footage and bonus features.
Yes.
The director's cut of Meet the Mormons, everybody.
Finally, we can see what the guys' kickboxing moves are in Costa Rica.
I guess I should feel bad for making fun of the film. Anyways, it'd be at least fine, nice to see a different segment that they didn't even include. That's kind of cool. But beyond that, I remember when we went by the Temple Visitor Center on Saturday after baptisms. By the way, folks, the baptismal assignment was great. I wasn't trying to pick on that one incident with the guy. It was wonderful to be able to do this.
Yeah, whatever. Keep
going. But I'm sitting there standing in the visitor center, and they go, ladies and gentlemen, the next showing of Meet the Mormons will begin. And I'm just like, and all I thought was, if I were here with investigators, I would have no desire to show them this movie. If the Joseph Smith movie were still playing, I would go see that. But
yeah, let's get some good. We don't need to be warm and fuzzy about Mormon.
Oh, well. So anyways, but if you get it, it's coming out on Blu-ray at some point in time. When is it? I don't know. What are the dates on the Blu-ray? It's or DVD.
Whatever. So there,
you can buy
there's
it.
a great piece on By Common Consent this week.
March 31st, by the way.
So a nice little piece on By Common Consent talking about the demise of church history sites as they were given to the mission or to the missionary department, right? And so so this guy is just sort of talking about his experience with like Nauvoo, where back in the day you'd go to Nauvoo, and it'd be a very sort of a historical thing. They put you back in that time and give you tours and talk to you about, you know, each of the tour guides would be sort of experts in that little area. And they would study about, you know, if I'm giving a tour of the Brigham Young house, I'm going to learn a lot about that house and Brigham Young and his people at the time and sort of know some stories and share some of that. So as you come through, you have this great moment. And he said it's all been sort of homogenized so that it can all be around getting referrals and bearing testimony. And so it's, you know, when you go to Nauvoo to go see everything, you hear that same sort of spiel 19 times in an afternoon with very little actual studied history or thought put into any of these things, which used to be really cool. And I mean that does sort of hit home for me because I'm from Northwest Missouri, so like in my area is Liberty Jail, Independence Visitor Center.
Far West Temple site.
Far West, yeah. Nobody's here. And then you go 3 hours one way and you have like Nauvoo. And then you go 2 hours north and you have Winter Quarters. So there's all this stuff around here. And it really did. It used to be that you would have these sort of great learning experiences where the Spirit would sort of testify as you went. And I'm fine with asking for referrals here and there where it makes sense. But like while you're in the Partly P. Pratt home, maybe I'm being flippant, but this guy makes the same argument, just saying it's, you know, it was better before when the focus was sort of on the history of what happened there and teaching me about that so that I could learn from it as opposed to just trying to prick my conscience with a feeling of the Holy Ghost as we learn about Emma Smith and having to clean the bathrooms in the mansion house or something like that.
I don't go ahead.
I miss the good old days. I agree with this guy.
I don't have a lot of. I didn't grow up around there. He does make some compelling points, though. That one could be more inclined to learn more about the church by having a cool historical experience and saying, "I want to learn more about this," and then digging in. But I wouldn't you also say, though, I think so many of these sites, I think I've seen some numbers before, the overwhelming majority of visitors are already church members. I mean, not a lot of non-members are going out of their way to go and visit Nauvoo.
No one's saying it needs to be one or the other either. I mean, it can be a mix of both. But if you're a church member and you go all the way, you drive to Nauvoo or go visit Liberty Jail, you go visit it to sort of get that experience. You want to learn something. You want to remember that, and then in doing that, I really feel like you do feel the Spirit. But when the focus is just on bearing your testimony, and not having any sort of onus to be an expert in that field or learn that station and the stuff that happened around that, where you could give stories or answer questions or help people understand.
But see, I've seen a mix. I don't know how it is in Nauvoo, but like when I've been up to Palmyra before, like we did the tour of the Grandin building, where they printed the Book of Mormon. And I thought the tour was historically informative. I mean, these sister missionaries that were there knew a lot of stuff.
Oh, that'd be great. That's perfect.
They answered questions. And it was really at the end, they just kind of testified about stuff. And I was like, okay, yeah, it's kind of like, oh, here's your pitch at the end, All right, great. But I didn't feel like it was lacking in historic detail. For example, or visiting the Sacred Grove, I thought they were
maybe it's magnified in a place like Nauvoo, where you have 20 buildings that each have a 10-minute spiel.
Because then you've got for example, like if you go to the new the Mormon Battalion Visitor Center in San Diego, which has this like whole interactive tour thing you go on, this like higher tech, big production kind of thing. That has faith elements, but it's basically just a multimedia experience learning about what went down. And then at the end, same thing. They bear their testimony, and it's fine. But maybe it is Nauvoo. I haven't been to Nauvoo. I don't know what it's like there.
It's not the bearing the testimony that's the problem. It's the bearing the testimony at each place, every single time. And so it becomes something where you sort of roll your eyes a little bit. When you're on your eighth time.
I gave you all my referrals, lady. So when you say each place, is this a thing where when you go to Nauvoo, you take a tour and you kind of like walk around the town, like each place?
Never been to Nauvoo?
I haven't been to Nauvoo. So do you mean you do a tour?
Yeah, Nauvoo is like, it's a restored town.
I get that.
So you go visit the Parley P. Pratt home.
And so
and then you go visit the Oliver Cowdery home and the Martin Harris home.
Mean that you'd go around on your own and they just have missionaries waiting for you and they all testify?
Yeah,
or
you
is
just
it a
walk,
tour and
you
walk
the town,
around?
Nope. You walk the town and you poke into the, the Browning gun shop and the post office and the tinsmith and the bakery.
Okay, so it's Colonial
Williamsburg.
The bakery
gives you a gingerbread cookie and the brick place gives you a free brick. And, I mean, you're just wandering the town sort of reminiscing and learning about this old way of life. And even the brick back in the day, like, dude, the brick maker used to be so good and he'd be really cool. And the baker was the same. And now you go and they're just, like, they make a brick as sort of this parable of finding Jesus, and that's it.
Oh, really?
And there's nothing about I mean, back in the days, they'd be like, well, this was interesting because they went and found the clay from here, and they mixed it with sand, they did this, and it was a weak clay, and so they had to do this to strengthen it, and that's what happened. Then Brigham Young, when he was building his house, went into the kiln after one day, but they don't do any of that anymore.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, they do bits of it, and it's more bits of it if the missionaries know. Anyway, this is dragging on.
Well,
but,
speaking of over-proselytization, some of you might be aware that missionaries who were using Facebook, many of them here, right now they are no longer using Facebook for at least a couple of months. No more online nonsense from the missionaries. Now, the reason is not because the Facebook experiment has been a big failure and they said, oh my goodness, it's just a mess. It's basically because this has sort of been like the beta of this whole experience, and now they are taking a break and refining the process, basically establishing best practices, and in a couple of months they will return and presumably be giving all missions in North America and some other places elsewhere, probably Europe, you know, basically more.
They're going to just start adding people to groups without their consent. And
pretty much.
Like spamming.
And they're going to let them, but they're going to establish actual sort of online best practices for the missionaries. And now, I don't think that just means rules of, you know, don'ts. I think it means ways to engage effectively on Facebook, for example. And this could be very useful because I'm sure, Al, you've seen it. I know many of you listening have seen it. The missionaries are great folks, but you'll see the stuff they post, and it'll be this, these, you know, pasted canned messages.
They're terrible.
All over the place. And so, obviously, there's some stuff to work out and to improve the Facebook presence, which I don't want to sound like a jerk, but when we had an elder in our ward on Sunday in ward council for Fifth Sunday suggested he could do a thing on, like, using social media. And, of course, all I'm thinking is, like, yeah, what are you going to teach us about that, sir? So anyway, if you hear about that, or you won't see any elders on Facebook for the next little bit, so this is a great chance to spam their wall so when they come back, they have lots of notifications.
Invite them all to play Farmville. So a couple of quick mentions. Apparently there was a Russian documentary that aired on Channel 5 somewhere in Russia that said that American missionaries were the pious missionaries from America were actually spies. They were spies sent over here.
Well, of course the church, they are.
The church issued an open letter back to them and said, that is not true. We are not spies.
And that's pretty much that, huh?
That was the whole thing. Also, there's another great blog post that has all the homes of the prophets if you wanted to go and see the quaint two bedrooms. I am impressed that there is very little extravagance in the lives of prophets.
Oh yeah,
I feel like, if they showed a picture of my home, it would be like my one bedroom, my half bedroom, house that I lived in. But I would love to see like the one guy that's like, well, that was a bowling alley downstairs in an archery range, just because I always wanted one, and then they called me to be prophet. I didn't know. It's not there.
The sad thing is, of course,
in very modest homes.
They do. But remember, this is only the prophets. So we're not seeing the homes of any previous or standing members of the 12.
Who's going to have a big home?
The fanciest house in the lot?
You think
Ballard? You would assume President Uchtdorf would know how to roll, right? It just seems... he grew up with very little in Germany, but he's a European, so he's going to have class.
I'm guessing he has a jewelry box for his rings.
Or his ties, because we've established many times in our general conference tie tracker exclusive that he is the only one who changes his tie for every single session. Pride.
He's good, man. He's good.
I don't know. I mean, this is the silliest thing to care about. Or I will say Elder Cook, because Elder Cook worked for large healthcare conglomerates in California. Ergo, he might be one of the most loaded of the apostles. That's my guess.
He's the tributary.
Whether he shows it, whether he is
also my last quick mention, Glenn Beck gets mantled, and we're not sure exactly what this means. Apparently, there's some Christian organization guy, Chuck Pierce, maybe some pastor somewhere, and he gave Glenn Beck a new mantle for the future. And people were mad because it was a Mormon and happy because it was Glenn Beck. And Global Spheres had some revival, and they gave Glenn Beck a mantle. So apparently, like, it descended as a dove. So good for him.
Okay. Here's a lengthy – we could get into a long discussion about this, but we'll try not to. So this guy writes a blog post, An American Dream Revealed. And it's – where's his name? Gun something. Anyway, this guy was once
Now, we're not sure if this is like a pro or an anti-Mormon piece, but – I think the topic is very relevant and worth discussion.
Yeah, I can't tell if he is still, you know, active in the church or not. But that said, it doesn't have to be pro or anti. It could just be, you know, hey, this is a matter of fact. So he could be an active member of the church who's just saying, hey, this is what goes down, you know. He was in the Utah State Legislature. And
well,
given everything that's gone on.
When they asked the question, how much... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was going to say, he's discussing the question of how big of a role does the Mormon Church play in Utah politics? And he says it's a huge role.
Mm-hmm.
I spoiled it. I spoiled everything.
I don't know what's happening with you. You broke up right there, Al. I have no idea what you said. But point is, he was in the Utah State Legislature, and it's basically the question of how much influence does the church have actually in the state house. Obviously, we just passed, you know, they passed the landmark gay rights bill in Utah, which, of course, the church had played a huge part in. And it's very interesting to read about his experience being there in the state house in Salt Lake. The church has lobbyists. That's nothing new. They have them in D.C. They have them in Utah. They probably have them in other state capitals as well. And even national, internationally, right? But you see some of the like pressure, it seems, the church puts on people in the sense that they get orders sort of directly from the top that stuff, you know, needs to happen. And this sad expression of a PPI happened up on, I'm going to call it the Hill in Utah, where the PPI meant you'd sit with the lobbyists.
Well,
it's not an
official PPI. It's what they're jokingly calling it, right?
They call it that in a mocking sense, basically in that you get called in a sense to be with the lobbyists and some unnamed church leaders, and they basically tell you, like, you need to vote yes or no on this. And he even gives the example of a guy, they've got this bill that's going to go through, and he says, like, hey, guy, how much of what is going on tonight regarding this bill has to do with the church? And he says, all of it. I hate this. He's like, it's not going to pass. So it's going to pass, isn't it? And the guys don't want to vote yes. And he says, yeah. In fact, if the vote is close, I have to vote for it. I have no choice. And he says, you had a PPI? He says, yep. And he walks away. And then They said the bill passed as lobbyists looked on from the gallery. Very interesting.
Well, the thing that's interesting to think about, because there's a part of it that's like the church should have no play in personal politics, right? They shouldn't, they don't very often, almost ever, tell their people how to vote. The church has interests, though, and when you have lobbyists that represent interests, I mean, their job is to go and lobby votes to try and convince people to go and vote one way or another and protect interests of that organization. And so to see that in practice, though, is probably a little bit less glamorous than you would hope or you would expect. Which holds true often in sort of realms of the church where you run into, the practical arm of the church as opposed to the spiritual arm of the church, thinking like business interests, investing, real estate. A lot of people who have interacted with the church in those realms are like, they are ruthless. They go for the jugular and they don't mess around. Where you know, there's part of you that would like to be like, oh, well, the church made this offer, and so they're going to be all on the up and up and give me a favorable one, and it's going to be a win-win. When, there's a for-profit arm of the church that's out there to make money, and they're trying to negotiate the best deals they can.
Well, that's that. Not sure.
And the same principle holds true into, like, lobbying in politics, right?
Their job is to go and get votes. But look, for example, at how they keep talking about, you know, trying to remove the Zion curtain or whatever for Utah drinking laws, you know? Like, is that something that has to do with the church's financial for-profit wing? No, it's the church just saying that they like the status quo of what's what with liquor laws, and they push people to act accordingly. I mean, it has nothing to do with the church's financial holdings. It's just the church throwing its weight around.
I'm just drawing a parallel. I'm not saying that they're connected.
Okay. So, but, yeah, it's not surprising. I mean, lobbyists are there to do their job. I don't have any problem with that, but it's very interesting.
Did it bother you as you read it a little bit? It bothered me a little bit to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of had to check myself and be like, ah, man.
No, me too. That's what I'm saying. It's unfortunate because you can have influence all you want, but if you turn that influence into just, you know, you turn on the flip the switch that just says, guys, this is what the brethren want, and you are a, you know, card-carrying member, so let's get in line. That'd be tough, because I'd be like, dude, this is politics. This is not me serving in my church calling, in which case I will get in line. This is me supporting my constituency, and that's not yours to tell me what to do with it. You can try
which
to
I wonder.
Me,
I wonder how much of this you remember when the church was lobbying for the MTC rebuild, right?
Yeah, in Provo, sure.
And they had that, you know, there's sort of that same impression given of like, listen, people, you're going to get in line. You're going to do this
and,
right way.
If anyone missed this, by the way, this was a couple of years ago now, I guess. They've been going off and on all the time with what to do with the MTC to make it bigger for capacity. This was even before I think they announced the age drop. Maybe it was right around then. But so the church wanted to build a big tower on the MTC property. Taller, easier, right? You can build up and fit more stuff in there. But then residents in the adjoining neighborhood cried foul and saying they had sort of an understanding with the church from way back when the MTC was built that the buildings would only be so high and they wouldn't encroach upon their neighborhood.
Right, right, right.
And that was an understanding. And so then the church said they wanted to do this, and then so basically church representatives kind of said everyone, like, guys, this is what the church wants to do. And they, and everyone in Provo City said, well, we don't care. We don't want this in our backyard.
And, well, the impression was that, like, the church, you know, the leaders wanted them to do that. And then they came out later and clarified, and they're like, no. We're not telling you how to vote. But there's sort of an attitude of that, which I think is probably represented in the upper echelons in Utah, just like we talked about earlier. The culture of the church would be, you got to do this. I would guess if you know, what there's probably no recourse if you vote, for the liquor laws to be changed, right? You're not going to get a temple recommend yanked and anything dramatic happening. I can't imagine that you would. Maybe you do, but there's just sort of that impression given or that expectation given in that culture. It just doesn't have a place in anymore. I don't think it's hard to see that. I don't know.
It is. It's sort of, you know, and what and the only reason it exists is you just it's a majority culture, and unfortunately, while we officially in the church don't support any kind of a lemming mentality or, you know, just, you know, quote unquote blind obedience, anything like that, we don't support that.
We expect it, though.
We don't. But culturally, you know, we have been acculturated in many instances to default to
and
that.
Now we're back to this anti-beard movement, and we've come full circle. Don't be a lemming, grow a beard. That's what we're saying.
Quick one here for you. So for the first time ever, the church is actually going to be releasing new translations of scriptures and materials digitally before they're actually in physical print. It makes complete sense from a business and logistics standpoint. The only downside to this I see is that, for the most part, these more obscure languages are in less developed, less populated parts of the world that might not have, you know, easy
only
access.
Only the missionaries with their iPads.
Yeah, they might not have the easiest access to the Gospel Library app or LDS.org. I'm sure they can find it because the internet's around. And it's and I also figure, why not? They have the translation done. I'm sure they see no reason why not to release it digitally. You know, it's not hurting anybody. But so you could look at it this way and just pretend there is no version of it until the print one shows up. I guess you could look at it that way. And say, yep. Great, here's the print one. But pretty cool they're doing that. And nice to see them going forward.
Yeah, it's great. So CNN wrote
Christopher said it will be
the,
one of many exciting developments in 2015. I don't know what the other ones will be, but I'm betting it will not be female ordination. Just saying.
I'm going to put my money there, too. Okay. CNN wrote an article on the church, and it stands against child abuse in scouting. They say, the church said it has no tolerance for sexual abuse in scouting, which makes it one of the most forward or proactive church-like organizations to do stuff like that where there's zero tolerance there.
They kind of pat themselves on the back a little bit. They're like, nobody does it as much as we do.
Which is good, because I think scouting would probably be one of those, especially today. I don't know why this is, but in today's age, it feels like that's a real concern that everybody should be worried about. 20 years ago, I just don't feel like, I mean, in my world, my parents never talked to me about, like, be careful your scout leader.
Oh, I know.
Never know.
Yeah, I mean, my wife and I were talking about this because I was wondering, like, didn't I get, like, when I was even in Mutual, didn't I just get, like, rides home from my leaders and it wasn't a big deal? Because I know now they can't do that. No one cared.
Great.
And it's funny we bring this up because I actually noticed in the temple on Saturday, we were doing confirmations for all the people that were there. And I'd never had this iterated before, and it might have been a standing policy, but they were very clear that girls could not be alone in the room with us. Boys were fine for whatever, but girls had to at least be in twos. So even if one of them was done and wasn't doing anything, they had to sit there and wait for the other one to finish up. So that's potentially been a longstanding policy for all. And I get it, but I certainly noticed that because they were very explicit about it. Also in that sexual abuse.
That's where I was going.
Well, and also in that article, it's very interesting. They talk about the doors, the windows. I didn't realize that we design our building specifically to prevent stuff like this. And it says that, you know, that's why if you go down in our buildings, apparently all the doors have windows in them. I assume they're talking only about new buildings because my building has no windows in the doors.
Yeah. Let's see. There's also keeping on the theme of sexual abuse. The co-founder of Ancestry.com, Daniel Taggart, was just arrested for several counts of alleged sexual abuse. He also founded LDSAudio.com and a couple other like LDS-themed things, which is why this is fairly relevant or interesting. Anyway, yeah. Don't do bad stuff to little
That's
kids.
That's our counsel wrong. For the week, guys. Don't do bad stuff.
Don't do bad stuff.
Don't be evil. Google said that once. And speaking of Google, they're bringing fiber to SLC. So if you're in
That's it.
So not just Provo anymore, folks. See, Provo made sense because Provo had the infrastructure already from their sort of aborted attempt at fiber in their own city.
I want it to come to Hamilton. Can we get Google Fiber to Hamilton?
Well, they have it in the Kansas City area. You just have to get them to run cable out, all the way out to you.
That's fair.
But other than that, quick things. There's a Ward Council app. If any of you have iOS, you can check it out. It's kind of interesting. It's called Ward Plan. And what's Ward Plan going to do? It's going to let you get organized, you know, collaborate.
I don't think that this app is great, just from the reviews so far.
There are reviews.
It doesn't look like it. I don't know. Maybe it's amazing. Somebody try it and tell me.
So you haven't seen any reviews, or did you look in the App Store?
I tried to look it up in the App Store.
Did you find it, or did you just try to look it up in the App Store?
No, there's no reviews.
Well,
that's
it's new. They're trying to
great.
Drum up some business, and because they are our sponsor, we will leave it to them.
They're our sponsor?
No, they're not. Maybe they
use
could,
the
maybe
word
cancel
app.
I'll make a call.
It's about people first.
I'll make a call this week. Organize your ward, okay. Everyone, with Ward Plan. and then lastly, we've talked about this before. You've been able to pay your tithing online for a number of years, but it's sort of a very convoluted way about to do it. But according to our friends over at Mormon Life Hacker, hi, Tevye, how you doing? You will actually be able to pay tithing online like in a normal, fluid, well-thought-out sort of thing, meaning you would log into your LDS.org profile and there would be just a simple drop-down that's like, pay tithing.
And it's about dang time.
And skeuomorphism is strong because the fields you fill out are they look just like your tithing slip. And so this is
Finally.
Coming soon. This is going to be rolling out. This is from a source from Mormon Life Hacker, but this is going down. And so it'll probably take a little while to fully roll out, but you will soon be able. And not only that, it'll even use your membership record number and even pull in anything you've already paid. Like up to that point.
I like that.
I really like that because one thing I hate is that, you know, if I were to move and change wards and
no, can I please get some points on my American Express? Is my next
and then
question.
That was the thing my wife and I were asking: can I pay for it with my credit card? Can I go into
can
debt
go into
to pay
debt?
My tithing?
Yes, yes.
I believe that is what the church wants me to do: go into debt.
That old theme: rob Peter to pay Jesus.
You know, President Uchtdorf did once say, "You don't need to finance a hamburger," but. If I finance my tithing, I get more miles. So,
why you got to be hate on miles, Uchtdorf?
I have
anyway,
hundreds of thousands
Jeff,
of them. I need them.
What a delightful show this has been.
I've enjoyed.
We've laughed.
I've enjoyed.
We've cried.
This
self-esteems
week.
Have been lowered, and smiles have been lifted.
Oh man, and we're only a week or so out from General Conference. So next week, I guess we could talk some conference predictions and all that.
Yes.
Stuff. Yes. Oh, do you have any yes. women's conference predictions? The General Conference actually starts this weekend. Sorry, I misspoke. It starts this weekend with the women's conference.
Heyo.
What predictions do we have for the women's conference?
Well, they will... no predictions. I have no predictions. Everything's going to be the same, and the theme is just going to be on loving and a lot of supporting your leaders and obedience.
Problems. The proper nourishing of husbands. That is what they will talk about.
By Dr. Laura Schlesinger.
Feeding and nourishing my soul. My body,
all right,
and my mind.
Well, everybody, it has been just a treat to be with you this week. Thank you for joining us. And if you need us, contact us at our email address, contact@thisweekinmormons.com, or go to our website, thisweekinmormons.com, and leave a comment.
And that's for
we
anything at
all.
Like,
all.
Like if you need people to help you move, we'll post it, okay?
Nope, not true.
I would, actually. If somebody did email me and said they needed help moving, I would post it on our Facebook page just for kicks and giggles. Speaking of that, we're on Facebook. You can follow us there. Follow us on Twitter as well and on Instagram and YouTube for those of you who are averse to like mobile apps and downloading stuff.
The internet.
Yeah, pretty much. It's the internet of things. Samsung. So, that's that. It's been tremendous.
All right.
Al, go skip around somewhere else now, you Disneyland fool.
I will.
Can't believe you went there and had a good time. You've spent years making
fun of it. It was one time, and I apologize.
You used to make fun of it. All right. We'll see you later.
I still do. It's awful. It's the worst.
Thanks for listening to TWIM, everybody. We hope you all have a terrific week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Tonight. tempest like a mile. All the lights seem to flash and pass you by. So, how's it gonna be? Down, cycling trivialities. I don't know which way to turn. Every trifle becoming bad news hurts. All this time you were chasing. Without knowing what you wanted them to mean. So, how's it gonna be? When it all comes down, cycling trivia.